actually read a written history of your life that came out in 2011. And I saw that you recommended towards the end that there be more educational programs from kindergarten to grade 12 about the importance of Stolo history and culture and your beliefs. How do you feel about that now? Because it's been about 10 years.
Well, it still has to happen because how we looked after the land, the water, and the air and all the resources that were there, people have to understand that that's still the thing that we have to do, not only just us, everybody else, because we're all in the same boat, right? Right now, everybody's moving out into the valley because all of the houses and apartments and condos are too expensive in Vancouver. So we've got to do a lot of development out here, but how do we make sure that it's sustainable for the future? Because if you look on the mountains now, they're putting all kinds of houses on that, and what impact does it have on wildlife? What impact does it have on the ecosystems? You know, those are the kind of things that we have to make sure that we're trying to do little harm as possible.
Why do you think it's important to educate kids in the Fraser Valley about that?
So that they can take a good look at how they're growing up right now and making sure that when they have children and grandchildren that they're going to try to leave them with the same kind of lifestyle they're having today.
What is the Stolo people's perspective on highway extension?
Highway 1 causes a lot of problems because of the amount of traffic that comes in and out of Vancouver. And it causes a lot of air pollution and causes a lot of people to come out this way and build their houses and live out here. So even though it's supposed to be lockdown, there's still a lot of traffic. So what happens when we get out of lockdown, traffic will increase some more. And it's not really the solution per se. If they wanted to try to make it easier for people to commute, then they should extend the railway lines.
So I said earlier, there are a lot of other First Nations communities where COVID has spread through reserves pretty fast. And as a result, racism against Indigenous people has kind of come to the forefront in Canada. I've been reading about different communities that have been facing hostility and having hate crimes happen to them just because people have a more dramatic reaction to COVID-19 spreading through a reserve. So I'm wondering, have you or anyone close to you that you know like faced that rise in racism in the Fraser Valley since the COVID-19 pandemic started?
I haven't really probably experienced it as great as people like in Cowichan, where that's one of the hot spots. But, you know, they have a larger population. The Cowichan people are about 4,000 that live in their communities, and they have to go to those malls and stores and stuff to get their food and whatever else. So they face the people more, whereas ours are spread out in the valley and don't always congregate. I guess the only place where people congregate a lot is in the Walmarts because of the food and clothes and stuff that they go out to shop for. But I haven't really heard about too many of them facing the same kind of thing that the Cowichan people have faced. Just something that we live with, you know, it's been here for 150 years. That's why they established reserve to get us out of the way. It's going to take a couple of generations to be able to get to a stage where it's going to be a lot better in terms of people getting along. And that's why it's important to have things taught in the schools from the beginning so that the younger people can learn about the different history. It wasn't always just a white history. You know, we were here for thousands of years before they came around. As I mentioned earlier, we had a way of looking after the land, the water, and the air, and looking after our communities. So they need to sort of understand those kinds of things right now because we're living under the Indian Act, and the Indian Act tells us what we can and can't do. And that's racism in itself. It still happens when our people go out shopping. Some of them get followed around the store because they think that they're there to steal everything. So, you know, and they're just out shopping. So it's just a subtle way of racism in existence. sitting on a Peace and Reconciliation Center at a UFV, and that's one of the topics we're looking at, racism and reconciliation.
And what kind of work are you doing there?
Educating some of the members of the committee. Just had the co-chair come play golf, mixed golf and business together, talk to some of our people in a very good atmosphere, I would say, you know, if we're out there in golf, and they can talk about how racism, how they impact and all that sort of stuff. So I had them golf with different people so that they can learn different perspectives from different people and different age groups. So that, you know, that's one way of doing that kind of work. They're going to be hosting a few webinars, you know, having panel discussions, people talking about it.
Do you think there needs to be revision of the Indian Act, or does it have to be scrapped completely? Do you think it's run its course now?
To me, it should be scrapped. We need time amongst ourselves to determine how we want to govern ourselves, because we used to have that governing system. And like I said, the governing system helped us look after everything, all the land, water, air, and looked after all of our people to make sure that everything was functioning properly. So there was a way of looking after ourselves, a governing system in place that was replaced by the Indian Act. Right now, we've had 150 years of the Indian Act, and it's hard for some people to figure out how we have to go back to what we had before and adapt it today. It's not going to be all the way it was back in the 1800s, but, you know, adapt it today so it becomes sort of functional for our people.
When the Justin Trudeau government came into power about 5.5 years ago, they made a big deal of reconciliation with the First Nations communities. They spoke at the UN. They did all those things that look nice, but their record hasn't really been up to par. Do you have anything to say about that?
Well, one of the things that the federal government wants to do now is make legislation to adopt the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People, and the province did that last year. A lot of the articles in the UN Declaration on Rights of Indigenous People talk about our right to look after ourselves. We should be able to get our land back, look after our land. So, you know, if the governments are going to be really truthful in adopting the UN Declaration, then they've got to change their laws and they've got to give us some of our land back, because it was basically stolen when they put their laws in place back in the 1860s.
What sort of work has been done by PARC? Like actual tangible work has been done?
I participated on a panel in the first one, and I talked about my experiences in residential school and all of those things about how it impacted me and impacts my family and communities. And we had people from justice talking about different aspects of that, you know, justice. And we had a fair amount of people there. And we did another one, and there was a fair amount of people who were on that. One session we had Bob Ray, who is the UN representative for Canada, talking, as well as Grand Chief Stephen Point.
Yeah, thank you for being here. We really appreciate your time, and we'd love to have you back sometime.
Okay, thanks for the invite.
Thank you.
Bye now.